We're going to get started. So it's Monday, January 19th. It's study night, and we've been studying Diligently Seeking God. This is our 18th study session of this. Last week, we looked at Joshua and how it was by believing that the walls of Jericho fell down flat, and it was by believing that Rahab, the harlot or the innkeeper, that her family was saved. And tonight we're going to look at Gideon. But before we do, let's quickly review Hebrews 11:6, our theme verse that says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." Now, if we go to verse 32, it mentioned a number of people like Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, and it gave some details about the things that they did by believing. So the last one it mentions in detail was Rahab. And then in verse 32, it just gives a list of a bunch of others that are also wonderful examples of this. And starting in verse 32, it says, "And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who, through faith, or believing, subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth." We're going to see some of the parts with dens and caves of the earth. "And these all, having obtained a good report through faith," through believing, "received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect." So all of these did what they did by believing, and they obtained a good report from God. But they didn't receive the promise of the seed of the woman that would crush the head of the serpent, right? But what they did receive was the things that God told them to do, and the things that God told them would happen during their time did happen. He enabled them to do the things that he told them to do, and he brought to pass the deliverance in the present time that they were able to enjoy. But there was something even greater coming that they didn't live to see because Jesus Christ came later on. They will see it because all these people mentioned here, they're going to be raised from the dead. And they'll see Jesus Christ sitting on the throne of God. They'll see that it did all come to pass. And what they did was instrumental in bringing it to pass. And what we do today is also instrumental in God's will coming to pass ultimately. We're part of it. The body of Christ was the purpose of the ages, remember? It says in Ephesians. So we are part of this thing. We have a close connection with these people that we're reading about. So what we're doing today is also very important. Now, I'd like to go back to Book of Judges. In chapter 6 is where it begins talking about Gideon and what happened with him. The reason I want to look at Gideon, there's a list of a lot of them in Hebrews 11:32. It didn't give them all in chronological order because Barak came before Gideon did. But Gideon is mentioned first in the list. So because he was mentioned first in the list, even though he was not the first chronologically, that shows that the record of Gideon is very important regarding understanding this topic of diligently seeking God and being well-pleasing to God by believing him, believing his words. And we can learn a lot from this. Now in Judges chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. So Midian was another nation. Remember when Moses left Egypt? He was in the land of Midian, where he was a shepherd for 40 years. But at this point, the Midianites turned against Israel, and they attacked him and overcame them. Now, it says that they did evil. What evil did they do? Well, we could read the rest of the record, and it will tell us, but it will also tell us when we look to where it's used before in the book of Judges. Okay, so I did a little search on the words Israel and evil, which I can do that for you right now. Okay, if we type in Israel and evil, there's 66 places that have both those words in there. But I'm looking in the book of Judges specifically, and the first place where this combination of words is used is in chapter 2, verse 11. So let's go there. And it says in Judges 2:11, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam." This verse gives us the specific evil thing that they did that God was very concerned about. They did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam. Now, Balaam is plural for Baal, okay? Or it might be pronounced Baal, but I'm just going to pronounce it Baal because I'm used to that. It means Lord, and whenever you see Baal worship, it's the worship of a local god. Like every little area might have their own favorite god that they worship. So there are names of different cities that have the word Baal in it, like Baal Berith. So that's the Baal of the area called Berith, you know? So these were local gods, and along with Baal, like you look in verse 13 here, it says, "They forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth." Ashtaroth would be like the female counterpart to Baal, who is considered a male deity, you know? Ashtaroth, it comes from a word, another word, Asherah, and Asherah basically means happy. But these gods that were goddesses of good fortune and fertility, okay? And the worship of these gods included sex orgies, of all things. I always wondered why the Israelites would be so drawn to this Baal and Ashtaroth worship. But if they lost sight of their commitment to serve the one true God and to do the will of God, and they look and see what their neighbors around them were doing and how that they were worshiping God, it might have seemed like a whole lot of fun to them, very enticing, very appealing to them on a census level. And so it was a constant draw for them to do that. Plus, these local gods, the whole point of worshiping these local gods was getting the gods to do the will of the people, okay? Getting the gods to provide the good fortune for the people, the gods to provide good crops and things. The things that the people wanted, they would offer sacrifices to these gods in the belief that these gods would provide them with what they want, which is different than worshiping the true God, because worshiping the true God involved doing what he wants you to do. And then allowing him to provide for you, there'd be a trust in God that if I do what he wants me to do, he's going to fulfill all his promises to me. But there was a different angle to the idol worship. It started with the desires of the people, and then investing imaginary powers in these idols that the people thought the gods would do the will of the men. Okay? So I want to read some of this chapter here, just so you can get an idea of what was going on in the days of the judges of Israel after Joshua died. In verse 7, it says, "And the people served the Lord," it's Jehovah, "all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel." Because Joshua was older than most of them by 30 years or so. So the younger ones, they would have walked through the Jordan River. They would have seen the walls of Jericho fall down flat and the other conquests that they had. Verse 8 says, "And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old." I believe he was about 80 or so when they entered the Promised Land. So he was judging them for a period of 30 years and leading them in victory. But the thing with the people is that they didn't completely conquer all the land. By the time Joshua died, there were others of the nations that were originally there still living there. And some of the tribes made deals with these other nations that they would allow them to stay there if they would pay them tribute money. And this was against what God had told him to do. So let's read on. In verse 9 it says, "And they buried him, Joshua, in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the Mount of Ephraim, on the north side of the hill of Gaash. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel." They might have heard about it, but they didn't witness it firsthand. "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam." They put their efforts into serving these Baal gods. "And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked the Lord to anger." One of the reasons that God wanted those other people out of the land is he was disgusted with what they were doing on a daily basis. It just infuriated God, the things that these people would do in the worship of these other false gods. And he made it very clear through Moses and in the law and through Joshua that you serve God only. You don't serve God and other gods, and you don't abandon God. You serve God. He's the one that saved our lives. He's the one that brought us out of Egypt. He's the one that gave us this land. Be faithful to him. But they provoked God to anger, and they forsook the Lord. They just left him behind and served Baal and Ashtaroth. So they weren't even doing what the written word of God said. They were just doing what the other people in the land did. "And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he, God, delivered them into the hands of spoilers." That spoiled them. That doesn't mean that they were so good they spoiled them rotten. The word spoil in the Bible means to take everything of value from somebody. Okay? So they were robbed. All their good stuff was taken from them. "And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed." Where did he say he would stand against them for evil? In the law. Remember the blessing of the law and the curse of the law? If they would love God and obey his commandments and keep them, he would bless them in the field and in the cities and in the farms, their animals, everything would be blessed. Their children, their families, everything would be blessed. If they would serve other gods and abandon his word, they would be cursed. Their crops wouldn't grow. They would be in poverty. They would have defeat before their enemies, and they would have sicknesses that would not be healed. Okay? God had promised these things. It was part of the law. If the people in a generation didn't bother to read the law, they were still under a covenant with God, whether they knew it or not. It was the responsibility of the parents to teach the children and the grandchildren so that the children and the grandchildren would continue in that covenant. And if they would abandon it, they would have the consequences, and then maybe that would wake them up. Verse 16 says, "Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of them that spoiled them." So God would have compassion on his people, even after they got themselves in trouble and were reaping the consequences. God would help them out. He would raise up an individual, and by that one individual would rescue them and get them out of trouble. Verse 17, "And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a-whoring after other gods." I saw a footnote by E.W. Bullinger in the Companion Bible that said this going a-whoring after other gods, he said that wasn't just a figure of speech. The whorings had to do with the sexual orgies and the lewd practices of the idol worship. So it was in a very literal sense. "They went a-whoring after other gods and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of the Lord, but they, this generation, did not so. And when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them." So God, his heart would go out to the people even though it was their own fault, and he would help them anyway. "And it came to pass when the judge was dead that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings nor from their stubborn way. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel. And he said, because that this people hath transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died, that through them I may prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein as their fathers did keep it, or not. Therefore the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. So now we know what the evil was that they were committing in serving these Baal and Ashtaroth gods. We can go back to chapter 6. Actually, before we go to chapter 6, look at the last verse in chapter 5. After the last deliverance, which was under Deborah the prophetess and Barak, who was the general of the army, they defeated their enemies that had conquered them at the time. And the end of the last verse says, and the land had rest 40 years. So it had been 40 years since the people had seen the deliverance of God in a big way. 40 years is enough time for the elders to die off and a new generation to come into a leadership position. And this new generation started leading the people in the wrong direction again. So back to chapter 6, verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel. And because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. So remember Hebrews 11, it talked about living in dens and caves of the earth. That's what they did. They couldn't live in their houses. They couldn't reap the crops that they planted. They had to go into hiding. And so it was when Israel had sown, that means they planted their seeds, that the Midianites came up and the Amalekites, who were always enemies of Israel, and the children of the east. So we have like three different groups here. Even they came up against them, and they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till thou come unto Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. So if anybody had any animals, they would have to have hidden them from the Midianites and the Amalekites and these other people from the east. All their crops, their fields were trampled. They couldn't harvest their crops, so they had trouble even having enough food to eat. Verse 5 says, for they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, like a plague of locusts that Egypt went through where they covered the ground. For both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. That was their purpose, to destroy the land of Israel. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. Again, they didn't have money or food. They were very poor, which was part of the curse of the law, was poverty and defeat before the enemies. And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, Jehovah, because of the Midianites, took them 7 years to even think to do that, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel. We never know the name of this prophet, but we do know what he said. So this prophet said unto them, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, and brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord, Jehovah, your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell, but ye have not obeyed my voice. So when he said, fear not the gods of the Amorites, it doesn't mean not to be afraid of them. It means not to reverence them, not to have respect for them and think that they're great and bow down to them. Okay, that's what it would be to fear the gods of the Amorites. And they did not obey God's voice. They disobeyed him. And that's all that that prophet said. Did he tell them what to do to get out of the situation that they were in? Well, if you look at what he said, all this happened because they didn't obey his voice. What should they do? Start obeying his voice, right? go back to the words that God had given them to obey and to believe. That's what they should have done. Verse 11 says, "And there came an angel of the Lord that sat under an oak, which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abiezrite." So this Joash, we'll see, is the father of Gideon. He's an Abiezrite. Abiezer was a son of Manasseh, who was the son of Joseph, son of Jacob. Okay? So Joseph had his first two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were each made a tribe and were each given property in the Promised Land. And within the tribe of Manasseh, Abiezer was one of the families. I think Manasseh had four or five sons, and Abiezer was one of them. So that's why he was an Abiezrite. And the name Joash means given by the Lord. Okay. And his son Gideon. The name Gideon means hewer, or somebody who cuts things down, okay? Like a wood chopper. So his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. So apparently they had planted some crops and gotten the wheat, and instead of going up where they would normally thresh would be on the top of a hill where there's a breeze blowing by. And they would take the wheat and they would throw it in the air. First, they would beat it with a stick or have oxen walk over it to separate the husks from the kernels. And then they would take a shovel called a fan and throw it in the air. And the husks would blow away and the kernels that are heavier would drop down. Made threshing and winnowing very easy. But Gideon is doing it by the wine press, which would be a depressed area, because he didn't want the Midianites to see him threshing wheat, because they would take it from him if they saw him. So he was doing this very cautiously. "And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord, Jehovah, is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Mighty man of valor. "And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord," talking to the angel, "if the Lord Jehovah be with us, why then is all this befallen us? Why did all this bad stuff happen? And where be all his miracles, which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." So he heard a word from God by way of this angel, and he's arguing against it. He said, "What do you mean the Lord's with me? He's not even with all of us." Now, the angel didn't say the Lord is with all of Israel. He said he's with thee, singular, thou mighty man of valor. And he's arguing, well, the Lord's not with us, otherwise we wouldn't be in this situation here. Verse 14, "And the Lord looked upon him." So the angel's there, but God's looking from above. And God is speaking to him by way of the angel still at this time, saying, "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" So he gave him a word to believe, right? Go in this thy might. Thou, you individually, Gideon, shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? And he said unto him, "O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." So he's giving an excuse, kind of like what Moses did that first time God met him at the burning bush, where an angel spoke to him out of the burning bush and told him he was sending him to Egypt to deliver the people out of there. And he said, "Me? Who am I? You know, I can't do this." Gideon had the same response. "And the Lord said unto him, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man." Again, he gave him another word to believe. If he would believe that, then he would accomplish it. Verse 17, "And he said unto him," so getting to the angel now, and he doesn't even realize that it's an angel at this point. He just thinks it's a man speaking for God. "But he said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me. Depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee, and bring forth my present, and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again." So he wanted a sign. And this is the first of several signs that Gideon asked for. As Gideon, we'll see, was afraid. He was afraid of the Midianites. We'll see he was afraid of the people in his own town. He was afraid of a lot of things, and he needed help, okay? Even though he was afraid, this was the man that God chose to do this job, okay? So the fact that he was afraid to begin with and needed these reassurances did not disqualify him, because God looks at the heart of a man and he sees the potential that's in that person, okay? That's an important thing to remember. God sees the potential that's in that person and what that person will do, maybe not on his own, but with God's help, you see? And God's going to help him through all this. So he asked for a sign. He said, you wait here. I'm going to prepare a present for you. And Gideon went in and made ready a kid. It's a baby goat, and unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. That takes time. It probably takes a couple hours at least to prepare a lamb or a baby goat and to bake some bread. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. Here you are. And again, why did he need this sign? He said, I want a sign that you are actually speaking to me, that I'm not just dreaming this or having some kind of hallucination here. I want to know that this is real and that the words that you spoke to me are really true. So that's why he asked for that. So he came back with this meal, and the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. And the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. So he puts the food on this rock. Man puts his stick on the end of it. Fire comes up, devours it, and then the guy disappears. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, alas, O Lord God, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. And you see this reaction a lot of times in people, that they think that if they see an angel of God face to face, that they're going to die. And we'll see that was the case, because God's response in verse 23 is, and the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Which would make sense, because if the angel told him to do something, he wouldn't be able to do it if he died, right? So at this point, the angel is gone. So God is talking to Gideon directly, because at this point, Gideon must have the Spirit of God upon him for God to be able to communicate with him, see? And God's talking to him conversationally. The Lord said unto him, peace unto thee, fear not, don't be afraid, thou shalt not die. Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord, unto Jehovah, and called it Jehovah Shalom. That's Jehovah, the Lord, peace, God our peace. Unto this day it is yet in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. So at the time that this was written, that altar was still there. Verse 25, and it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove that is by it. So Gideon's own father, Joash, actually had an altar to Baal on his property, in his yard, and a grove. And the grove, again, it's an Asherah, it's a grove for idol worship. It would either be a tree or a group of trees or a wooden pole that would represent this fertility goddess. Okay, so they would take animals and burn them on the altar for Baal, and then they would worship this fertility goddess, and there would be a lot of inappropriate activity going on. So God tells Gideon, before we go any further, you take that altar, you topple it over. You take that grove, you cut it down, and build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove, which thou shalt cut down. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, he was afraid of them, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. So he was afraid. He was afraid to do it in the daytime, because these were Baal worshippers, even though that prophet had come and had reproved the whole nation of Israel for worshiping these Baal gods. It's still going on. And he was afraid to do it in the daytime, but he still did it. And that's the important thing. Even though he felt fear, he felt afraid, he still did what God told him. In this case, he just did it at night instead of the daytime, because God didn't make a stipulation that it had to be in the daytime, right? He felt safer doing it at night, so that's what he did. But he did it, and that's good. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the grove was cut down that was by it. And the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon the son of Joash hath done this thing. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove, the Asherah, that was by it. Surrender your son, we're going to put him to death because he did this, because we want to keep worshiping Baal and Ashtaroth. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? You know, do you have to save your God? Shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't a God save you? Will you plead for Baal? Will you save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death whilst it is yet morning. If he be a God, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar. So his father, Joash, he came to his senses that day. He said, you know what? All this Baal worship, why would we have to do this on behalf of Baal? Because he can't do anything for himself? If he can't do anything for himself, he's not really a god, and we shouldn't be worshiping him. We should be worshiping the true God. Verse 32 says, therefore, on that day, he called him Jerubbaal. That's Joash. That's what he called Gideon, his son. He gave him a nickname, Jerubbaal. That means let Baal contend, like let Baal plead for himself. So he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him because he hath thrown down his altar. So Gideon got a nickname, let Baal plead for himself. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. So if the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, it means all of a sudden God is working in him to do something, to take action. And he responded. So the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet. And Abiezer was gathered after him. So everybody from the family of Abiezer, there would have been hundreds of them, were gathered after him, after Gideon. And he, Gideon, sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, the whole tribe of Manasseh, who was also gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher, and unto Zebulun, and unto Naphtali. Those are three other tribes of Israel. And they came up to meet them. So he has people from four of the 12 tribes of Israel gathered to him. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor or on the ground. And if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. And it was so. For he rose up early on the morrow and thrust the fleece together and wringed the dew out of the fleece a bowl full of water. But it was dry on the rest of the ground. And Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece. Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. So he started out with the words that God had given him. He just wanted to verify these words and have some tangible proof that God actually did speak those words to him, and God would bring it to pass. So he asked God to do this thing for him, and God was kind enough to do that. And it helped him. Not completely, but it helped him up to that point. And we'll see he's going to need a little more help after that, and God will also give it to him. In chapter 7, then Jerubbaal, who was Gideon, and all the people that were with him, rose up early and pitched beside the well of Harod, so that the host, the army of the Midianites, were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now, I peeked ahead to see how many there were. There were about 135,000 of the Midianites, Amalekites, and children of the east that were camping in this valley. 135,000. There were 32,000 with Gideon of the four tribes of Israel that had joined him. So God said, you know, there's 32,000. If they defeat the 135,000, they will just think that they're hot stuff. And they're not going to give me the credit for it. They're going to take the credit to themselves. I want to make it so obvious to them that I am doing this for them that they won't be able to miss it. So he gives Gideon some instructions in verse 3. Now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from the Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. So 2 out of 3 said, I'm scared to death. And if it's okay to go home, I'll go home. Thank you very much. Be praying for the rest of you. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought down the people unto the water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth of the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go every man unto his place. So Gideon had to tell almost 10,000 guys, you're free to go home. We're going to fight this with just 300 men and me. So that's what they did. And then they would know that 301 against 135,000, if they win this battle, they know it was God that pulled it off and not their ability. So the people took victuals or victuals in their hand and their trumpets. And he sent all the rest of Israel, every man, unto his tent, and retained those 300 men. And the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. So here is a word from God to Gideon for him to believe and to act upon. Okay? And if he will do this, then he's believing he will be well-pleasing to God. If he's really diligently seeking God, he will do this. So this is the word. Arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. The battle hadn't started yet, but he put it in the past tense, saying, I have done this. It's absolutely going to happen. But look what he does out of kindness to Gideon, because he knows what Gideon's like. Verse 10, but if thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah thy servant down to the host. I want you and your servant to sneak down just to the edge of where the army is camping. And thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number, as the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came into a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay along. So I had this dream where this little barley bread tumbled into the army of Midian, and knocked a tent over. And his fellow answered and said, This is nothing save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. Wow. So here's two guys. God gives one a dream, and he gives the other one the interpretation of the dream. So he had to put his spirit upon them, at least temporarily, for them to get this. And he has Gideon sneak down there just so he can overhear this. Look what happened, verse 15. And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel, his 300 guys, and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. At this point, you know, he's believing everything God said. He is fully committed, he's fully persuaded, and he just knows that this is going to happen, that it cannot not happen. Okay? He's absolutely convinced God did this for him. Took a man who was, you know, just scared to death of the enemy, scared to death of his own household, scared to death of the people in his town. And now here he is. He's absolutely convinced, I'm going to do what God tells me to do, and God has delivered it into our hand. And he tells his guys, arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. Those are words of believing, right there. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, 100 each, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers to cover the light that the lamps would make. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Okay, that's the instruction. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch. So they were just doing the changing of the guards. And they had but newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers that were in their hands. So now, all of a sudden, there's 300 lights surrounding the army. And the three companies blew the trumpets in the middle of the night. That's a big sound. 300 trumpets blowing. That's more than 76 trombones and 110 cornets, you know. 300 trumpets. So they blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Wow. That shout must have just rung out and echoed. And after that, one guy had the dream and the interpretation. Probably word of that spread among the camp as well, you know. And they stood every man in his place about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. Just general panic. Pandemonium. They're all running away, and the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. Now remember, there were three different armies there, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and the children of the east. And they're all running around, and they start fighting against each other and killing each other. Every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. And the host, the whole army, fled to Beth Shitta in Zererath and to the border of Abel Meholah unto Tabath. Don't know where these places are, but they ran away. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and out of Asher and out of all Manasseh and pursued after the Midianites. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites, and take before them the waters unto Beth Barah and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together, and took the waters unto Beth Barah and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, and they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side Jordan. Now, I don't want to read all the rest of it, but that was the most dramatic part. You see, when Gideon gets to that point, and God brings him to that point where he just knows this is it. I'm going to do what God says. God's going to bring it to pass. What he's promised, he's going to perform. If you continue reading, you'll see that they all get killed. And after it's all over, I want to show you a verse in chapter 8, verse 22. I think this is very significant. After it's all over, victory is declared. God is praised and glorified for what he did. But the people just think all the world of Gideon now. He was the general of the army. It's as if like he was this great military mastermind. All he did was listen to God. God had to work with him to overcome his fear, and then he believed God and carried out what God told him. That's really all that believing is, getting the words of God, believing them, and acting upon what God said. It's not just a general confidence that everything's going to be okay. We saw that when, after Jericho was defeated and they attacked Ai with all the confidence in the world, but they got their butts kicked because they didn't have the words that they needed from God to let them know what to do and what was going on behind the scenes that they didn't know about. Okay? Gideon had the words from God. He needed that confirmation that, yes, it was really God telling him this stuff, and it actually would come to pass. But once he was convinced, boom, he took the action. But then after it was all over, and the fighting's all done, in verse 22, it says, "Then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, both thou and thy son's son also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian." They said, "Gideon, we want to make you king." They'd never had a king in Israel up to this point. They had judges. Said, "Gideon, we want to make you the king. We want you to be the one to fight our battles for us. You were the guy that delivered us out of the hand of Midian. We want you to be king, and your son after you, and your grandson after him." And Gideon said unto them, "I will not rule over you. Neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord, Jehovah, shall rule over you." See, because Gideon was a believer. He was not ambitious. He wasn't hungry for power. He didn't want the luxuries of being a king. He didn't want the praise of the people for being a king. He just wanted to do the will of God. He was a judge, but he said, "God's the king. God's the one that is going to rule over you as he has all along. You just need to be obedient to him, not to me, because of who I am, but to God, because of who he is. So I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." A lot to learn from that record about believing, about overcoming fear, about just seeking to do the will of God, and that's it. That's what Gideon was all about. Now, going forward, I'm not going to look at everybody else that's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, but we're going to look at the Lord Jesus Christ next when we come to Hebrews chapter 12 and learn what we can from his example of diligently seeking God and his example of believing. Okay?